And good evening, everybody. Welcome to Final Four edition of the Hoops HD Report. Coming to you here Thursday evening, March 31st, the last day of March, and heading right into the Final Four coming up on Saturday. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood. Let me start by first introducing the panel. First of all, back with us again is John Tytel. John, how you doing?
Good. Coming to you live from the center of the college basketball universe, Washington, D.C.
Well, this is at least for tonight, I guess. We'll get to that in a second. Also, Matt Sikowski back with us again. Matt, how are you doing?
Great to hear you, Chad. Welcome, guys.
And finally, as a special guest, we have Mark Emmert joining. Oh, wait a second. No, we have David Griggs. Apparently, just like with South Carolina, we sent the wrong invite out.
Oh, shut up. Oh, we've got to talk about that. Yeah, I mean, we were going over what to talk about. That never came up. This absolutely deserves a mention. Wow. Let's start there. How do you invite the wrong school?
Yeah, this is the breaking news that was just coming out today, is that apparently a text message went out to South Carolina congratulating them on the invitation to the NCAA tournament this year and starting to make travel arrangements. And then a very quick oops, because they did not get a bid. Right. David,
to talk about what normally happens, you know, when you make an NCAA tournament in any sport, I believe they all have selection shows now, at least all the team sports that I know of. And generally, 10, 15 minutes after it's announced, someone from the NCAA contacts you. It's generally like a director of ops, and basically they work out the travel itinerary as far as the hotel and getting you there and whatnot. And apparently, now, I have never known this to happen, at least in my experiences of being around teams that have made tournaments in various sports, before the end of the show or before the end of the announcement. But it sounds like this year they were calling people either during the show or before it aired, and they called South Carolina by mistake. And our best guess, I think, is that they meant to call USC.
USC, or maybe it was Vanderbilt, or maybe it was Tulsa. I don't know. Now, I mean, it's just coming out now, John T. Obviously, it was something that they corrected very quickly. Otherwise, we'd have some enraged Frank Martin speak right now. Last couple weeks ago, I think. All right.
Angrier Frank Martin, if that's even possible. No, I think it's a legitimate common mistake with USC standing for South Carolina and Southern Cal. I'm sure if USF South Florida makes the tournament, then USF San Francisco gets the phone call. Like, it can happen. There's just so many letters in the alphabet. But what I had heard is that they actually learned about the leak first and saw they weren't in the leaked bracket. So when they got the text message, I assume they thought it was some horrible prank gone wrong, but at least I think it softened the blow, because they had found out earlier through the leak that they hadn't made the tourney.
All right. Well, at least that softened it, because I think otherwise we would have heard some enraged comments said that. But this is coming out now, and it was confirmed by the NCAA.
South Carolina should have been selected. Maybe they shouldn't have been, but they belonged in over teams that were actually in. Does this help make up for it, since they weren't in, but they were invited when other teams shouldn't have? I don't know. What a horrible blunder. And the fact that they were right on the bubble. Good Lord. What an awkward conversation.
Hey, yeah, I see. That was meant to go to Marquette there, I think. That was just an error all wrong there.
Yeah, maybe that would have been. It would have been a little easier had that text gone out to, you know, Grambling State. Okay, we would have known. Hey, yeah, we're not really expecting that. But wow. Right. But let's get right into it. We want to start here before we actually get into the NCAA tournament. Just briefly mention the fact that we've had three other champions crowned in this past week. First of all, congratulations to the Columbia Lions. The second national postseason tournament championship by an Ivy League school ever, joining, I believe, is a 1975 Princeton team, winning the CIT. John T., did you get a chance to watch the Lions? I know you've got some Ivy League ties.
I did not catch the game on ESPN 8, the Ocho, but Columbia for making it. The good news is that they had this amazing senior lineup. They had a weird situation where their shooting guard, Grant Mullins, had missed most of last year due to concussion. and their small forward Alex Rosenberg had withdrawn from school last October. He broke his right foot, and the Ivy League does not offer medical redshirt, so he literally had to drop out of school and then come back. Obviously, it worked out well for him in the end. Unfortunately, it worked out too well for Coach Kyle Smith, as he is off to the other USF, San Francisco. He just took the job earlier this week.
Yeah, literally, you know, celebrated a championship and the next day accepted a job and said goodbye to his team. But although they were, like you said, they were a very senior-laden team. So it's, Matt, I don't know if you got a chance to watch the game tonight, though. The NIT championship, George Washington took care of Valparaiso. So congratulations to the Colonials as well. Another championship there.
I will say, I think, judging from, I didn't watch it, but following along a little bit on Twitter, that was a coaching effort by Valpo by a man who is not going to be in Valpo much longer.
Is that out? Wow. Never mind.
Yeah, there's some rumors swirling with both the Georgia Tech and Vanderbilt jobs open still regarding both the guys that were in the game, the coach of the game tonight. I think Mike Lonergan's getting a little love out there as well. And, David, I know you watched the Vegas 16 tournament, and you were the only person that did so. So why don't you tell us what happened there, because I don't even know who was in it.
Well, I mean, it was Old Dominion in Oakland, and Old Dominion had what appeared to be a comfortable double-digit lead for most of the game, not a blowout, but certainly in control. But Oakland, in the very final couple minutes, hit back-to-back-to-back threes to cut the lead down to one, and that ended up being like the final margin. So it actually was an exciting ending, and the 10 or 15 people or so that were in attendance seemed to really enjoy the game. This was, I mean, there are sparse crowds throughout the semester, throughout the season. We see them especially early in the season in some of these exempt tournaments and even in some of these regular season games with teams without big following. I don't think I've ever seen an arena look more empty than this one.
And it really could be interesting to see if this tournament even returns next year at this point.
Right.
I mean, they were supposed to have 16 teams. They only had 8. Nobody showed up. I don't know that anybody watched the games. They didn't get any big name schools.
Yeah.
One other tournament, the CBI is actually still ongoing. That's the only other small tournament that hasn't wrapped up yet. That Friday night will be the game 3 of the best of 3 finals, Morehead State and Nevada. That's the only other tournament out there besides, of course, the big one. But one more thing we want to get to before we get to the Final Four is some coaching news. We already mentioned the Kyle Smith move from Columbia off to San Francisco. A few other things. Our old friend Herb Sendek, back in the head coaching ranks, took the job at Santa Clara. Another new coach in the West Coast there.
Can I say something that's going to surprise you? I think this is a good hire by Santa Clara. I realize Herb Sendek had some issues at Arizona State, but he did have a couple years where they were successful, and I didn't think he did bad at NC State. I mean, geez, boy, look how good they've done since they got rid of him.
Another guy who's back in the head coach ring, Rick Stansbury, gets the job at Western Kentucky. John T. Mike Denlevy, a guy with a lot of NBA ties, taking the job at Tulane, maybe one of the most surprising coaching hires.
I've been saving up a stat for you all week long. So, In the history of the NBA, there are 10 guys who have coached at least 1,200 games and not won a championship. As you might imagine, a lot of guys coach a long time, like Phil Jackson, because they keep winning and they keep sticking around. Of the 12 guys who've got, 10 guys who've got 1,200 games and 0 championships, the one with the lowest winning percentage, Mike Dunleavy.
Well, he's now on to a bad team in a very mediocre conference.
I do want to say that this was one of the more spectacular coaching changes I have ever experience. Fired during a game that he won.
Oh, geez. A few other news. Chris Beard, with a great run with Little Rock this year, gets the job at UNLV. Kevin Stallings at Pitt, I think we mentioned that last week. Johnny Dawkins, after getting fired from Stanford, takes the UCF job. So he and Mike Dunleavy can go head-to-head this season.
Yeah.
Travis Ford took the job at St. Louis. Jared Haas took the job at Stanford. And anything else that sticks out to you there, Matt?
Yeah, I want to mention Travis Ford at SLU because I follow the SLU search because if the Big East expands, they're a possibility to join. And so I found out a little more interest, and plus Rick Majerus, the Marquette ties, developed a little bit of affinity for SLU despite their kind of spotty history. But I thought this was a real opportunity for them to go. There were some guys, Leon Rice, Rodney Terry, Bryce Drew. All those I thought would have been great options, and they hired Travis Ford, which I did not feel was a great hire by any means.
No, and like we mentioned earlier, a few couple jobs still open in Georgia Tech and Vanderbilt. I think the two most notable ones, David.
Yeah, Georgia Tech, I think that they're I expect that they might be courting Bryce Drew, if you believe the rumor mill. That would be a solid hire. I'm a little surprised they didn't go after someone a little more established than that. I think Bryce Drew would be an excellent hire. I just thought Georgia Tech would look A-10 Big East, somewhere around there. Mike Bobinski, very basketball-oriented. He was at Xavier for, I believe, 20 years, hired a lot of good coaches. Bryce Drew's an excellent hire. But I was kind of thinking, you know, he'd start courting Chris Mack a little bit. He hired Chris Mack once already.
Yeah, I'll say that I think if this were like one or especially 2 years ago, Chris Mack would probably be on his way to Atlanta already. But like with what Xavier did this year, and now they're firmly established in a major conference, and now I think the Chris Mack administration issues have leveled off. I think that's why this year it was not really a non-starter. That why leave a Xavier program he has rolling for Georgia Tech? That it's going to be a monumental climb in the ACC.
Georgia Tech's rolling just backwards.
Okay, let's move into the NCAA tournament now, where we want to focus the show. Obviously, we are just 2 days away from the Final Four, and let's start in the South region, where Villanova, with the huge upset, take care of Miami, and then the huge upset over Kansas. And John T., I know you're a guy with Philly ties here, just as I am in a way here, and this win by Villanova knocking off of Kansas, how impressed were you with what Jay Wright's team did?
Very impressed. I think that the whole country was picking the Jayhawks, who were this amazing number one seed, and they score, and they have veterans, and they have Bill Self, the National Coach of the Year, just announced today. However, Villanova somehow held Kansas to a season-low 59 points. I still don't think they could do that if they played him 9 more times. I think that it was just – I mean, it was a great effort, but I still can't explain it. Like, I really thought Kansas was going to do it, and they had some runs, and it was in doubt. But kudos to Coach Wright. This is a hell of a team he's got.
Yeah, and my personally living just an hour outside of Philadelphia in the Atlantic City area here myself, you know, everyone's going nuts for this Villanova team right now. It's just a very exciting. Philadelphia teams have a history of choking, though, so we'll see what happens tomorrow and or Monday. But, David, how good does this Villanova team in trouble here? With Oklahoma next, especially with – why don't we talk about something that happened back in December between Villanova and Oklahoma?
Well, Oklahoma absolutely blasted them. Now, it wasn't – you know, the storyline of that game was nothing like this when they were out in Hawaii. You know, it wasn't a normal circumstance in which a game is played. But still, Oklahoma absolutely throttled them. So there is reason for concern if you're Villanova, but I'm not expecting a blowout. It because again, it's just Villanova. I think as good as they were then, they're playing a lot better. Now I've been big on Oklahoma all year. I thought that their Elite Eight win over Oregon was among the most impressive of all the teams that we see in the Final Four right now. Oregon was a real good team. I thought that they would have the hardest time getting here outside of Villanova beating Kansas, of course, but they just throttled Oregon. So I think Oklahoma, I think their best is better than Villanova's best, but Nova certainly has a chance. I wouldn't just write them off because of what happened in December.
Yeah, and Matt, I want to bring you in here. I mean, I think the most impressive team this past weekend was this Oklahoma with what they did first to Texas A&M and then to Oregon. I know North Carolina also dominated their two games, but I think Oklahoma did it against a lot tougher competition.
Oh, yeah, no, I was very impressed. And Oklahoma basically cruised in both their Sweet 16 and then Elite Eight games. So that for a team that I thought was not playing that well going into the tournament and did not expect that much of, even in what I thought was the most wide-open region, But no, they had Cousins and Woodard stepped up against A&M when they face guarded Buddy Hield and made everyone else beat them, and everyone else beat them. And then Buddy went off against Oregon, and Oregon just really never was in that game.
Second half, they really
ever got within single digits in the second half.
Yeah, and John T., I know that today Denzel Valentine was named AP Player of the Year vote that's done before the tournament, but I think what we saw from Buddy Hield, maybe he should have won the award.
If I think Denzel Valentine's lucky that the voting was done in early March rather than late March, because I think you're exactly right. Buddy has been on an amazing stretch. I mean, this is not just like a good stretch for this year. I believe his four-game stretch in the tourney so far is the best since some guy named Steph Curry about a decade ago with Davidson. His 37 points against the Ducks, the most in the Elite Eight since 1990. I don't even think these players were alive in 1990. He's having like a Glenn Rice, Christian Laettner level tourney, and we'll see if he can get it done for two more games.
So that leaves us with half the matchup there. We've got the Oklahoma-Villanova. We'll get to our picks in these games in a little bit here, but David, let me throw it back to you here as we move over to the East region, where North Carolina, also dominant, looked very good in their two wins over both Indiana and Notre Dame. As I mentioned, not quite the same level of competition, but the Tar Heels moving on to the Final Four as well, and the only one seed to make the Final Four after all four one seeds made it to the Elite Eight.
Yeah. And again, they've been blowing through the whole tournament. I mean, obviously the opening round wasn't too much, but they blew, after struggling for a half, blew past Providence and then looked really good against an Indiana team that was playing really well. So, I mean, it was pretty impressive.
Matt here, this North Carolina team, just how good are they? I mean, do you think they are the best team and the favorite now at this point or no?
Probably the favorite. I think they have the most talent. Can they be consistent for two more games? It looks like this last about 10 games or so, they've hit a stride. They've just ran over opponents and been rarely tested here. So we'll see. Will this continue here? I think their first game against Syracuse, they should win comfortably. I mean, now that they're familiar with the zone, it won't intimidate them. I think if the first shot doesn't get in, they'll have plenty of second shots to also put in that. And I think they'll have enough that they'll disrupt Syracuse on defense. But then I think Nova might be an interesting matchup, because the way that Nova shut down Kansas, if they could do the same thing against Carolina, where deny Bryce Johnson the ball, deny Kenny Meeks the ball, and try to make their guards beat them, like they're trying to make Kansas's guards beat them, that could be an intriguing matchup where that might pitfall for Carolina.
David, in the Midwest, John mentioned the Syracuse Matt just mentioned the Syracuse team, but we have a term here we've used at Hoops HD for a few years now called Clusing, named after our good friend Tim Clus over at Iona, and that's when you have a heavily favored team that has a significant lead in a game and finds a way to blow it.
Right.
And I think we saw an example of that in the Midwest region final there between Virginia and Syracuse.
I've never seen anything. What was it, a 25-4 run or something to close the game? I mean, Virginia was just on cruise control. It looked like it was just one of those things that Syracuse was just sort of lucky to be here, and I was sure that they were finally going out, but they started pressuring Virginia, and I'd never thought – known Virginia, I wouldn't go so far to say that they're great against pressure, but I've never seen them struggle against it the way they struggled against Syracuse, and they just got back into the game, and Virginia could not make an adjustment, and this follows a game in the round of 32 where they made a very good adjustment. So it was just very – I was just shocked that they couldn't adjust to it.
I agree exactly. John T., I don't know I've ever seen a team, this good of a team, look so inept against the pressure as I saw that in the last half of that game.
Especially because the first half they were, I mean, not dominant, but like in control. They really fell apart. I think the turnover margin during the run was 6-0. I mean, they have seniors, they have Brogdon, they have Tony Bennett. Like, it's not supposed to happen. It's one thing if it's Northern Iowa, not taking anything away from them. They had a great season and they're good. But Virginia's a one seed. One seeds are not – the reason you get to be a one seed is because you don't fall apart when the going gets rough. You, like, take your game to the next level and you win the game that you're supposed to win instead of clusing.
And I just had no idea how that happened. I mean, was Virginia this bad against the pressure and nobody ever tried it against them all season? I mean, that's what it almost looked like. Like, hey, we just figured out how to beat Virginia. You just put a pressure on them. It was unbelievable. Obviously, our good friend Joby not here tonight. Maybe still in recovery after that. But, John T., let me stick with you here. Does Syracuse have a shot against North Carolina now?
Not much of one. I mean, if you can beat Virginia, you have a shot against anyone. The Oklahoma-Villanova game in December was a one-off game, so the sample size, I think, is too small to work with. Carolina has played Syracuse twice. They've beaten them twice. They haven't destroyed them. I think the average margin is like 8 to 10 points. But a couple of takeaways from those two games. Number one, Marcus Page was terrible. Only 9 points combined in two games, maybe because of the zone defense, but 16 assists. So I think he's just going to be distributing left and right all game long. Bryce Johnson has been dominant all month. He had a pair of double-doubles against Syracuse. I expect him to continue his dominance. The X factor, Isaiah Hicks. He had 31 combined points in two games against the Orange this year. I didn't think he was that good a player, but maybe he found the trick to beating the zone. If you're a fan of three-point shooting, this is not going to be your game. The teams have combined this year 23 of 92 from behind the arc. So I pray they can turn it around. Otherwise, it's just going to be clang, clang, clang with the trolley.
And I think Roy Williams is good enough a coach to have North Carolina prepared for this vaunted Syracuse full-court press as well. David, do you agree North Carolina rolls in this game?
Not necessarily. The two played earlier this year at North Carolina. Syracuse played them very tough. I think North Carolina wins. I don't think they blow them off the floor, though. And the other thing is that sometimes teams like to win just to annoy me, and I think that's what Syracuse is doing.
Matt, I don't know. I mean, we've had some surprising teams in the Final Four, the George Masons, the Butlers, the VCU, first four to Final Four run. I may be more shocked by the Syracuse team being in the Final Four than anybody else I've ever seen in the Final Four. Not that it's, I'm almost more shocked by them because I just didn't think they were that good of a team. I thought they were, at least the other teams were the best team in their conferences. This was not that.
And it's not like, say, okay, Syracuse, whatever, 19-13, but had a strong stretch like Wisconsin, whose overall record going in wasn't much better, but were playing really good. Syracuse lost 5 of their last 6 going into the tournament. They look like a team that, whatever, like, they got in just to get enough good wins, whatever. And then, okay, maybe you win 7-10, it's a toss-up game, you might win one, and then you'll go away. Well, they probably would have gone away, but then Michigan State was out, they beat Middle Tennessee. Next game, okay, Gonzaga, very good team, not an 11 seed quality, much better, but still, instead of playing a 3 seed, they're playing an 11. There you go, and then the Elite Eight, you have that incredible meltdown by a team that I thought was unflappable. Like, I was checking my phone, like Twitter on my phone when it was up 15, so I'm like, oh, whatever, this game's over, and it didn't really excite me that much to begin with. If I wanted to watch two ACC teams, I'd watch Big Monday more, but...
Yeah. Well, let's turn back to the first semifinal between Villanova and Oklahoma. I think we all unanimously have agreed that we think North Carolina is going to win that game. The Villanova-Oklahoma game, I think, is going to be a great game despite what happened out in Hawaii earlier this year. And I am going to go with Oklahoma in a close one. I know that I should be rooting for Villanova. I probably will be, but I picked Oklahoma to win the entire thing, so I got to stick with that. John T., who are you going with in this game?
It is going to be a great game. I feel pretty confident about that. I've seen both of these teams blow out other teams, and they both beat one seeds and all that stuff. But I really think I don't see this as a blowout. I think it's going to go right down the wire. I've been riding Oklahoma since the preseason, and Buddy Hield is just exceeding everyone's expectations. I don't think Villanova is going to shoot 4 of 32 from behind the arc like they did on December 7th at Pearl Harbor. But I still think even if they take it up a notch, that Buddy's just on some Leitner, Glenn Wright-esque run. So I'm going to go with the Boomer Sooner.
Boomer Sooner, that's two of them. David?
I'm going with Oklahoma as well. I think Villanova's played really well. It wouldn't completely shock me if they won. When they're hitting their outside shots, they're almost impossible to guard. And like John said, I think they're going to shoot a lot better than they did back in December, but... I just love how Oklahoma's playing, and I think they move on. I think that the championship game is going to be incredibly exciting.
All right. Well, Matt, let's start with the Villanova-Oklahoma game. Are you going to make unanimous with the Sooners?
No, I'll go separate here. I'm going to take Villanova. I'll make a little bit of a homer pick, being a Big East guy. But as this Nova team, it feels like they're on a mission. And I think one thing, they've now incorporated Michael Bridges into the rotation, and I think his length could possibly give Buddy some issues trying to shoot over, being 6'7 with a 7-foot-plus wingspan and being quick laterally. I think he's going to make life a little tougher for Buddy, and then the other guys in Oklahoma will miss a couple more shots at the same they did it against A&M. And I say Nova wins like a 70-66 type game.
And who do you let me stick with you then. Who do you like in your championship game then? You've got Nova and North Carolina.
As much as I would really like to say good, I will take evil and say Carolina wins. I think close game, maybe even a little higher score, but I'll say Carolina something like 80-75.
David, do you agree that North Carolina is going to win it in a championship that will later be vacated, or no?
No, I think Oklahoma gets it done. I love that matchup. It could go either way. I think that would be a fantastic game, especially like with how North Carolina's looked on offense, and how I think North Carolina's defense has improved dramatically, you know, between the start of the NCAA tournament and where it was really all the way through the ACC tournament and where it was for most of the regular season. They're just very tough defensively now. Great game, but I think Oklahoma gets it done.
John T., what's your pick?
I want to go Sooners because I love Buddy, but Carolina has a first-team All-American of their own in Bryce Johnson. And say what you will about Roy Williams, he knows how to coach, he knows how to get his team through the tourney, and he knows how to win games once he gets through the tourney. They're going to have a huge advantage with the size. They're going to make their shots. I think the Tar Heels are going to bring another banner back to Chapel Hill.
I'm going to go with Oklahoma. I'm going to stick with my pick here, although I think it's going to be a heck of a game. I think it's going to be a really great championship game. Unless Syracuse ends up in it, then it'll be a blowout. David, are we going to have a vacated championship if Carolina wins it?
Possibly, probably not.
Or do we just save that for John Calipari's Memphis team?
Yeah, we'll just save that.
Say the game never happened and won Kansas.
Right.
Any other thoughts on the tournament, what you've seen so far and what you're expecting this weekend? Let me run through each of you here. Matt, let me start with you.
I have to say, unfortunately, the ACC has proven to be a mega power, and while I think this glory might be a little temporary, given that all their coaches are now collecting Social Security, the ACC is on top now. Big 12, just for whatever reason, doesn't fare as well in the tournament, even though they look so good in the regular season, come tournament time, especially Kansas. I mean, Oklahoma is the first non-Kansas team to make it, I believe, in like the last 10, 12 years. Now, the flip side, I think this is good. The Big East, while not a giant breakthrough that I might have been hoping for, just getting Nova there, having this run, and all their teams, save Seton Hall in the 11 o'clock Thursday night, looking pretty good on the national stage. I think the Big East is now there right with the other Football 5 conferences.
Yeah, the Big East, and the Big East also had Syracuse and Notre Dame in the Elite Eight. David.
Shut up!
David, your any other thoughts from you about the tournament and what we've seen so far?
Not really. It's just been, it's great every year. It's been great again this year. I really just enjoyed watching a lot of these teams in the regular season, and it's been fun. Oklahoma, who we were huge on all the way back in November and December, you guys were all over them, I think, in the first some of the early season preseason conference previews that we did. And here they are. So, again, it's just fun watching everything culminate. And, we're going to have one hell of a finale like we do every year.
John?
I mean, I've seen Yale win a tourney game, so I don't know what else I can top on that. But I hope everyone enjoys the coaching this weekend, because we've seen some teams fall apart, choke, whatever you will, in the past few weeks. Jay Wright has 474 career wins as a coach. He is fourth among the final four coaches. Williams and Kruger and Boeheim, even with vacated wins, all have a ton more. These are four experienced coaches. Williams has won one before. Boeheim's won one. I think you're going to see a great chess match that even if a team falls behind, the coach is going to figure out how to get back, and it's just going to be fun to watch.
I agree with you completely. This may be one of the best groups of four coaches in the Final Four that I recall in quite a while, as far as all four of them just being such good coaches. Say what you will about Jim Boeheim or not. I know our colleague Lee Delvecchio would have other comments about it. But, right. any other final thoughts from anybody? Matt, let me start with you here.
Well, like I said, though, this is, I think, Ben, a lot of you see coaching rise to the top, and I think, yeah, you're going to see down the road, this could probably be four Hall of Fame coaches in this Final Four. Well, I think at this point, Jay Wright's the only one with even like an iota of question on that. So, yeah, high-level coaching, and we'll see.
Yeah. John?
For the other two people in the country who watched the Vegas 16 tourney, Jay Felder in Oakland came up 1 point short against ODU. He was named third-team All-American the other day as a junior. He's 5'9". I know it's a big statement. He's on his way to becoming like one of the best 6 foot and under players in the history of college basketball. So tune in next year, assuming he doesn't go pro, please God, and enjoy the Kay Felder doing Kay Felder things.
We can have some great Oakland Valpo battles next season coming up with both teams have coming back in the Horizon League. Right, but I guess we're doing our under the radar preseason preview at this point. But David, let me throw it over to you here.
We need to ditch the Vegas 16 and just put the CIT back at 32. But again, no real final thoughts. Severe weather's moving through where I am, and I'm looking at the map, and I'm right in the "you're screwed" area.
So. All right, well, David, be safe. Anybody that wants to check out the website, there is a countdown clock that has actually started on the website. I just wanted to let everyone know that we are 224 days away from the start of the next college basketball season. We've got a couple days left, but come Tuesday, we can start counting it down, and we will be doing that. But we want to thank everybody for joining us. Another great season here at Hoops HD.
Quick final thought here. Just said some of these programs quit hiring these retread coaches that you know can't coach. Can we have something fresh in that?
Well, you know, Rutgers, we brought in Steve Pikel. I'm very happy about that, at least. Yeah. But for David, John, Matt, I want to thank everybody for joining us. We'll be back
Next week. One more wrap-up show.
Yeah, so. Another wrap-up show next week, and we'll have off-season podcasts and just follow along on the website. We'll keep you up to date. Thanks for joining us, everyone. Have a great evening.